All right, we're on top Samach Amud Aleph. Today's an amazing daf. You could circle the Samach at the top. There are two, some amazing sugyas today. It's a daf you're going to want to remember from Baba Kamma. So step at the top. Shalach biyad pikeach, apikeach chayav. So we said before, this is from the Mishnah. Mishnah discards about giving over a flame or a ish to a person. The first case in the Mishnah is discussing a chershot of a katan. Here it says if you give it to a pikeach, if you give it to someone who is of sound mind, then they are responsible for whatever transpires with the fire. So Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, man detani liba lo mishtabish, man detani niba lo mishtabish. So in our Mishnah, the girsa, the regards to what happened to this beira, what happened to this flame, right? It says ba acher v'liba. Person comes along v'liba and he blew on it. So he equivalent to making a bellow to help ignite or have the fire spread. So there are two possibilities with the girsa and the Mishnah. Is one possibility is that it's liba. The other possibility of the girsa and the Mishnah is that it's niba. So Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak says that they're both equally good girsa oat in the Mishnah. Why? Mandatani liba lo mishtabesh. The one who uses the word liba is not making a mistake. Tichtiv belabadish, right? With the fire, the flame of the fire. So there you see that the word liba has reference to fire or the raising of a flame. Mandatani niba lo mishtabesh. One who uses niba is also not mistaken. Tichtiv bare niv fatayim, right? So those that say vayiten lecha. So here the word niv comes from the lips, from the saying or the quivering of the lips. So niv also is a same idea that the air that leaves the mouth, right, that when one speaks or one's lips quiver, that's the what's blowing or helping to elevate the flame or the fire over here. So either one, niba or liba, are both sufficient or good, the girsaot in the Mishnah. Now, the Mishnah ended off with a case of libta ruach kulam paturim. Right, so it's a case of the wind carried the fire, then everyone is patur. I mean, the assumption is that the wind is an exogenous variable that was not, that you couldn't have anticipated, and since that's the case, they would be patur over here. So now the Gemara introduces a new case, which is tarabanan liba velibta ruach, that he blew on it and the wind blew on it at the same time. If his blowing in itself was sufficient to cause the fire to spread, then chayav. Bimlav, if not, patur. Right, so then, if not, he's patur. Now, Tosfos says right off the bat that we have to be talking about here, what type of ruach are we talking about here? Says that we're talking about a case of a ruach, right, that bifnei atzmo was insufficient to spread the fire. So the external wind by itself was not enough. So the only question now is you. When you blow on it, right, can you spread the fire or do you not spread the fire? So that's the only question at hand, and therefore you'll be chayav a patur, depending on whether your blowing is sufficient to move the fire. So where it says, Amai, why should this be true? Why is it true that when the wind and you are partners in doing this, that we say you are a patur if your blowing in it wasn't sufficient in of itself? I mean, only together with the wind did it cause it to move, but each one of you independently would have been insufficient. So now the Gemara says, why not? Why don't we have a case by Shabbos, Melech Shabbos, that is, Kizore Ruach Misayato. One of the Melechot of Shabbat at Zorah is winnowing. Winnowing involves taking the grains and then using like a pitchfork or some sort of instrument to throw it into the air. The wind comes and blows and takes away the chaff that is floating in the air, and the heavier grain or the stalks fall back down to the ground. So that winnowing involves not only a human action, but also involves the wind assisting you in this case. So here we see that a wind-assisted malacha is considered a malacha, so why can't over here, can't we say Eish, why can't the mazik of Eish also be in a wind-assisted mazik? Okay, very good. The Gemara is going to take a while to get to your answer, Shoal. That is what winnowing is all about. But we're going to come up, and this is one of the big chidushim on this daf. We're going to see something important chidush about Melechet Machsheva, just what you were pointing out, Shoal. So Amar Abayi, So Abaye says, well, what's the differentiation in the case here? Achim Ma'iskin and Konch Liba Mitzad Echad, Vilibto Aruach Mitzad Echer. He was blowing in one direction, and the wind was blowing in the other direction. All right, so then, one of two possibilities of what Abaye's answer is that generally when you blow in one direction and the wind blows in the other direction, we assume that the wind is not going to help you, and you're not going to help the wind because you are offsetting factors. And therefore, you should not have lava suke adate. He would never have thought that the wind would help him because it's blowing in the opposite direction. That's one way to understand the Abaye. The other possibility is that your blowing could only take, say, for instance, there's a large madura, there's a large fire over here, and your blowing could only affect one side of the madura, and the wind could only affect the other side of madura. Each one independently, if you blew on it, would not sustain the fire. The fire would extinguish itself. Only together, with you igniting one half of the madura and the other wind igniting the other half of the madura, together are you able to create the fire. So again, this was not you and your action in itself was not sufficient, and you could or shouldn't have anticipated the wind because it was blowing in the other direction. That's Abaye's answer. The other possibility, Rava Amar, Kigon Shaliba Beruach Mitsuya. He was blowing along with a normal course wind, and with his blowing in the normal course wind, the fire would not have spread. But if we ruach v'libto ruach she'ena mitzuya, so what happens if he blew and then a ruach she'ena mitzuya showed up, and that's what caused the fire to spread? That's why he's patur over here, because again, he couldn't have anticipated it based on what he should have anticipated, or what we expect him to anticipate, is if he's blowing with regular winds, nothing would happen. All of a sudden, a gust of wind comes that he didn't expect, and that caused the fire to spread, and that's why he is patur over here, because it was an unanticipated wind. Reb Zera Amar, Kigon de Tzamra Tzimure. The case here that he's warming up his hands. He's blowing like this, like to warm up his hands like this, blowing or lightly blowing on his hands. It was the natural breathing or natural course of action. It wasn't that he actually was actively blowing on the fire. He was just there, and his breath happened to help the fire to spread. So again, that's an unanticipated consequence of his either blowing on his hands to warm his hands up or his breath coming out. And since it's an unanticipated consequence, he would be patur. Now to Shaul's question, here comes Ravashi. Ravashi Amar, Ki amrinan zore beruach misayato hanyin imile leinyin Shabbos. That's true of Shabbos de melechet machshevet asra Torah. That the Shabbos, by Shabbos, there's a melechet machshevet that the Torah demands. Aval hocho, in our case over here by Nezikin, groma b'almahu, that's groma, v'groma b'nezikin, patur. When it comes to groma b'nezikin, you are patur. So first of all, I want to point out here. First of all, we're talking about melechet machshevet. What's so unusual about this? That's why I said this is an amazing daf, is I think, I don't know if I could see it definitively, but I think this is the only place in Shas where melechet machshevet is used the chumrah. Generally, when we have a principle in Shabbos, we say that something is, for instance, anywhere in Shas, anywhere else in life, that action would be considered a maaseh, that action would be considered a melacha. But because by Shabbos you require melechet machshevet, and that's missing, melechet machshevet is usually a ptur. By Shabbos, even though this action in general will be classified as a melacha, or classified as a maaseh, right? But by Shabbos it's not, because you did not reach the level needed by Shabbos, which is melechet machshevet. It has to have intent, has to be for the same purpose, all the requirements of melechet machshevet. So generally, it's a ptur. This is the only place in Shas, I think, where you'll find melechet machshevet is a chumrah by Shabbos. That means that in any other din in the Torah, this ma'aseh is not a ma'aseh. I mean, that's what Tosfos basically says. Tosfos spells it out in as a nice way of formulating it. He says that the melech of Zorah is groma. Basically, you are tossing the materials up in the air, and the wind catches it. So you're goreim that the wind should catch it. But, as Shaul said before, that is the melacha of Zorah. So since you have done exactly what the melacha of Zorah is classified as, therefore you're chayav by Shabbos, even though there's no ma'aseh here. There's no ma'aseh. And by nizakin, well, guess what? If you don't have a ma'aseh, then you what you are called, groma benizikin. And we know the din by groma benizikin is that you are patur. So that would be the differentiating factor here, that melechet machshevet actually would be a mechayev over here. So that something which otherwise is not a ma'aseh, and by nizakin you'll be patur because it's groma. Nevertheless, over here, you'll be chayav by Shabbos because that is the melacha. That's the definition of the melacha. And that's, I think, show exactly what you pointed out, that how could the Gemara even ask the question, because, right, we're talking about Shabbos, and Shabbos is different because it's all about the definition of the melacha. Right, so that's one amazing part of the definition. Yeah, go ahead. It could be a malacha, doesn't mean it's a maisa, meaning that there are two different definitions. You didn't do anything in terms of asiyah. You did something in terms of malacha, which the Gemara classifies, or the Torah, the 39 malacha, is classified as a malacha on Shabbos. So that's exactly the point here, that you can have something that is not a maisa, but yet a malacha. And so, yeah, during the rest of the week, it's also malacha, but that has no implications. The fact that it's a malacha has no implications on 6 days a week. The only time it has implications is on Shabbos. Whether as a maisa, then that's a different story. There is no maisa here, and that has implications in nizakin and in other areas where you need a maisa to be chayav. Okay, next Mishnah. Shalechet de be'ira v'achla itzim o avanim o afar chayav. If the fire goes and consumes wood, you know, trees, kindling, stones, it scorches the earth. Chayav. In all these cases, you're chayav because it said nemar ki teitze eish umatza kutzim nechal gadish o akama o asadeh. So it has all these four different things, which the Gemara is going to ask, why do you need all of them? Shalem yishalem avirat abeira. Then whoever ignited the fire, or the one who causes the fire to spread, is now responsible for it. So Amarava, lamali dechtav rachmana kutzim gadish kama v'sadeh. Why do I need all four of these items to be written in the pasuk? Trichi, I need all of them. Why? Deikatav rachmana kutzim. If the Torah just written kutzim, hava mina kutzim hu dechayav rachmana mishum deshchiach eish gabayu. Because that's where fires start all the time, when the dry brush, you know, and the thorns, that's a natural area for fire to develop. Ushchiach the posho. And therefore, it's normal where people either ignite this type of thing or they make mistakes in those areas, and that's why they're going to be chayav. Of a gadish, delo shchiach eish gabayu, generally gadish, the silos, or where you pile up your grains, they don't normally have fires spreading over there. Velo shchiach the posho, and generally, when fires, you know, those people aren't posheya to allow fires to spread in those areas, aim alone. Maybe you should not be chayiv in that case. V'katav rachmana gadish. Had the Torah only written the word gadish or explained about a gadish, havamin a gadish chayav rachmana mishum dehefsein merubahu. Because that's a real loss when it comes to, you know, burning crops or silos. About kutzim, dehefsein muat, but when you're talking about, you know, thorn bushes and, you know, bristles and stuff like that, dried out brush, that's not something that's so costly, so maybe it should be patur over there. So aim alone. So that's why it explains why we need gadish and why we need kutzim. Now, kama. Lakama lamali. Ma kama begalui, afko begalui. So kama comes to teach me that tamun be'esh is patur. Only things that are exposed or visible are chayav when it comes to esh. So that works well according to the Rabbanan. But according to Rabbi Yehuda, who says tamun be'esh is chayav, what are you going to say? Well, the Rabbi Yehuda, the mechayav niske tamun be'esh, kama lamali. So it says, the rabot kol balei koma. Comes to include all balei koma. Rashi defines balei koma as anything that is af balei chayim ve'ilanot, any living object and trees, to include all other living objects and trees. Tosfos quotes a Yerushalmi that says that it's just including ilanot and anything that's mechubar lekarka, anything that's attached to the ground. So not balei chayim, but anything that grows or is attached to the ground, that's included from kama. Rashi says it even includes balei chayim, any living item that's included in that. So now, Rabbanan, the Rabot, called Balei Koma min Aluhu. So now, what did the Rabbanan learn this idea out of Balei Koma? So Nafkluhu mi O Hakama. They learned it out from the word O. For Rabbi Yehuda, O mi Bayele Lechalik. He needs the word O to divide, meaning Lechalik to say that you don't need all of these, but rather each one in itself is sufficient to make you Chayav. Rabbanan Lechalik min Aluhu. Where did the Rabbanan need this? How do they define, how do they see that these four different words or objects that are mentioned in the pasuk are actually independent? There's another O in the pasuk, so they have no problem with that. So now you have two O's in the pasuk. So Rabbanan used one O to teach you the chalek, one O to teach you balei koma, and the word kama to teach you tamun be'esh is patur. Now Rabbi Yehuda uses one O for the chalek, the kama to teach you balei koma, and now he has an extra O here. So that's what Rabbi Yehuda. The other O is just a parallel structure in the pasuk and not coming to teach us anything significant. Now, sadeh, the last word, which we didn't get. We got three of the words, the objects mentioned in the pasuk. The last one is sadeh, lamali. Latuya lichka niro v'sichcha avanav. That comes to teach you that if it scorches the earth and the stones, that you are chayav in that case, and that's what our Mishnah mentioned, those items that are you are chayav for. So Gemara says, lichto v'rachmana sadeh v'lo bahani hanach. So just write the word sadeh, and we would cover everything else. Meaning, because that's the lowest common denominator of what it could burn, which is basically inanimate objects that are, right, just scorching the surface of them, and you're still chayav. Tricha, because the Gemara says, Itav Rachmana Sadeh, have a mina mashiv Sadeh in Midachrina lo. Had it just worded the word Sadeh, I would have thought only things out in the field are you chayav for. But, meaning like tua, grains, but not the ground itself, right? Whereas after I have the word kama, or after I have objects besides the Sadeh, then I know from the word Sadeh to teach me that Sadeh doesn't mean what's in the field, but rather the field itself, the surface of the field, and that's what it comes to teach us. That's my Sadeh in Midachrina lo, kamash mon, that is not the case. Okay, now the Gemara is going to begin a gadato that follows through basically all the way through the Amud Bet. All right, so now Amar Rabbi Shimon bar Nachman Amar Yochanan, Ein Purnanut ba'al yolam el v'zman shereshaim ba'olam. The only time that Purnanut comes to the world is when there are reshaim in the world. Ve'ena matchelet elam netzadikim tchila. And only starts, the Purnanut start from the tzadikim first. Shenemar, this is from our pasuk, Ki teitze eish umatza kotzim. Ematai eish yotza. When does the fire start to go or to spread? When it has fuel. What's the fuel for fire? Kotzim. Right? Those are the thorns, right? The less pleasant elements. And same thing with the world. The Arishaim are the cause for the fire to spread. It only begins, the fire begins with the tzadikim. Shenemar, v'nechal gadish. Right? It says, ki teitzei eishu matza kotzim v'nechal gadish. So the verb v'nechal, it should say v'achal gadish. Right, I mean, just like it's matzah kotzim, it should be achla or achal gadish, right, which would be the active form of the fire consuming the gadish. But rather, it says v'ne'echal gadish, that it was already consumed. V'achal gadish lo nemar ela v'ne'echal gadish. When it's a ne'echal gadish kfar, that the gadish was already consumed. So what does that mean? That even though the kotzim are the cause for the fire to spread, what is consumed first, or what has already been consumed by the time it spreads there, is the gadish. The Gadish representing the Tzadikim, right? The better part, the, as we said before, the Tvua, the silo, the harvest. So that's the Mishnah. So Tani Rav Yosef, Maidichtiv Atem lo teitzu ish mipetach beito ad boker. By Mitzrayim it says that you're not allowed to leave your house until the morning. Shkeven shenitan rishut l'mashchit enu mavchin ben tzadikim l'shoyim. Once there is permission given to the Malach HaMavis, or is there permission given for some sort of punishment, dever, anything of that sort. Then everybody's at risk. Vlo'od, not only is everybody at risk, not only is that, but it starts from the tzadikim. Shenemar, because it says, v'chrati mimcha tzadik v'rasha. Right, that it says that I will cut off from you a tzadik and the rasha. So the tzadik, right, comes first in the pasuk before the rasha. So Bochi Rav Yosef says, Kule hai nami ein ledomin. He says, wow, he says that all this and being a tzaddik and all that we do, and nevertheless it reaches the ein domin, meaning that those are not comparable, meaning that the ones who are not the cause of the problem and they get attacked or they get hit first, or according to this, they are subject, right, to the punishment of the mashchit once it goes out. No. This is a good thing that tzaddikim get taken first. Why is this? So the pasuk pshat in the pasuk is ki mipnei hara, because of the bad that tzaddik is taken away. But the way he's darshing, or by his darshing, the pasuk is ki mipnei hara, before. Mipnei means in front of. Ki mipnei hara nesaf tzaddik, before the bad comes, the tzaddik is taken away. So the situation or the circumstances are going to become much worse. So the tzaddik is taken out of the world first, so that he doesn't have to suffer the mashchit and all the punishments of the rishayim. And that's a tivuso here, that the tzaddik is taken first, and that shouldn't be viewed negatively. So you're saying, mitzadadin, that's what you're suggesting over here, mitzadadin, the tzaddikim should go first, because they're partly responsible for what happened to the door, because they were unable to save the door. Prevent. Okay, that's nice. So you're also you're saying number one, they're partly responsible, but also that Hashem eliminates them so that they don't prevent Hashem from carrying out His plan. Because if they were there, they could stop. They would act as a defense for the people. Very nice. All right. Am Rav Yehuda Marav. The Olam Yikanes Adam B'chitov Yetzei B'chitov. Person should always enter a city when it's Kitov. Kitov comes from, you know, Maaseh Bereshit. Kitov is very looking at the or Kitov. That means when it's light out. A person enters the city when it's light and leave, right, the city while it is still light. Meaning that a person should travel during daylight. That it's dangerous for him to travel when it's not daylight. right, that it's problematic to travel in the dark. Shenemar, because it says, Vatem lo tetsu ish mipetach beito ad boker, right, by the same pasuk, but here, then in Mitzrayim, that the Jews should not leave Mitzrayim until, right, the morning. Nobody should go out of their house until the morning. Why? Because you have to wait until it's light out to leave. Now, the question is, over here, why is it, lolam yikanes adam chitov v'yetzei b'chitov? Is there any significance that it says yikanes, and then it says v'yetzei? Generally, when a person travels, they leave first, and then they enter second. How come over here you're entering first, and then, right, then you are leaving afterwards? So Rabbeinu Tam makes a big deal out of this, and Rabbeinu Tam is medaktik from here, that this is only an issue when you are going from city to city. That if you're leaving your house, that this is not a requirement, because a person's familiar with the streets, a person's familiar with the area when they're leaving their house, and therefore this requirement of leaving during daylight does not apply to one's house. It only applies now when he's entering the new city. So that's why the first case, or the first thing mentioned in the Mishnah, is that after he's left his house, then yikanes adam b'chitov, he should enter the city and it's still light out, because that's the first stumbling or his first issue he will encounter. And since that's the first issue we encounter, we say ikanes first, and then v'yetzei when he starts to leave that city again. That's the Rabbeinu Tam's diuk. The Reed disagrees and says that throughout Shas, we have these ideas, for instance, like ben ha-shmashot. In the Gemara it says, in Bamei Melekim Taim HaChav, it says keheref ayin, right? Zeh nechnas v'zeh yotzei. This one comes in and that one goes out. Now, nechnas is laila, and yotzei is day. It should say zeh yotzei v'zeh nechnas. But that's just the nature of speech that people use. They always talk about knisa first, and then yitzia second. Not that that's an absolute demand that it be in such an order. And the Reed says that he doesn't believe that the Rabbeinu Tam is right here, and that either way, even when you're leaving your own house, there's still a requirement that a person do it b'chitov, still do it when it's daylight out. Right, Tanu Rabbanan. Right. I don't know if they. I don't know if it applies. I mean, the way the it's a good question if it applies today, but. You know, Rashi says it's a problem of mazikin and listim, right? And maybe the Rabbeinu Tam introduces this idea of michsholim on the way. So, I know it's a question. I don't know if by day flight necessarily, but it might be by driving that it has some implications. By driving, if a person's not familiar with the route, if a person's not, you know, going through a dangerous area, then they have to consider doing it during daylight hours versus at night, based on this Gemara. All right. Right. Right, definitely today. I think the circumstances are different, although there are definitely situations in which you could compare them to the circumstances that the Gemara is addressing here. Tanu Rabbanan, Dever Ba'ir Kanes Raglecha. If there is a plague going on in the city, stay home. Shneamar, Vatem Lo Teitzu Ish Mipetach Beito Ad Boker. In Mitzrayim, when Hashem's, you know, bringing the Dever, he's killing the Makot Bechorot, and he tells them, stay home. Don't come out. So, it's interesting, by the way, just a point, I don't know if I've mentioned this before, but if you look at the Makot, the 5 and the 10 Makot, that the first 5 really apply to the Behemoth, and the second 5 really apply to the humans, that would put Dever and Makat Bechorot at the, right, as the parallel Makot. And this is what the Gemara here calls the Makat Bechorot Dever over here, which is an interesting, it's interesting that parallel if you run them 5 against 5. Right, there are others that explain, which might help your cause, is that there's also a requirement of not leaving at night, meaning that there are two issues. They can't go out at night because it's just nighttime, and number two, they can't go out because of the dever or because of the mashchit is there. So there are two separate issues, and that might be here. You can take care of the dever aspect by Hashem doing it, but you still have the problem that it being nighttime, and you're not supposed to go out at nighttime without the proper either accompaniment or without, it's dangerous to leave at nighttime. All right, so now the Gemara brings an additional pasuk. V'omer lechami, babecha derecho, skor daltecha, go my nation, go into your rooms, close your doors, badecha, you know, on yourselves. V'omer, mechutz tishakel cherev, v'mechadari meima, outside the sword will leave those, you know, widowed or without children, v'mechadari meima. And in the side, there will be fear inside the rooms. So Gemara says, my v'omer, why do I need 3 psukim to teach me the same thing, that whenever there's dever, when there's, you know, pestilence or plague or whatever it is, that I should be in my house? The chitema, so what I'm going to say, hani mili belelia, that I would have thought by Mitzrayim it was at night. So that's why it was good to stay home. Aval b'yomam alo, but during the daytime, ein hochanami, why can't I go out? So tashma lechami, ba b'chaderecha skor t'otecha. Right, so that comes to teach you that you go in, right? In the day, even in the daytime, you should lock yourself up in your house when the bed's going out of sight. What I would suggest, that's only when there's no fear inside. When people are inside, there's no fear. When there's fear inside, meaning that there's danger outside, but there's fear inside. If I go out, at least I can be with other people. I can be with my friends. I can company, right? The misery loves company. So when I'm in the company of others, I would be in a better circumstance. So that's it. Tashma, mechutz tishakel cherev, u'michadarim eima. Afagav de mechadarim eima, even though there's fear inside, mechutz tishakel cherev. Outside, the sword is doing its business. So better off not to go out and have to face the sword and to be in fear and stay at home. Rava, b'idan ritcha, whenever there was a angry time as Rashi defines as dever, when there's a plague or pestilence, avisacher koi. He used to close his windows. Right? He used to close the windows. Ki Allah mavet bichaloneinu. Death came through the windows. Tanu Rabbanan, Ra'av ba'ir, if there's famine in the city, pazer raglecha. Right? Take flight from that area. You should leave. Whenever there's Ra'av, you should be out of there. Shnemar, vahi ba'av ba'aretz. There was a Ra'av in the land. Vahirat Avram, Mitzrayim alagursham. Avram goes down to Mitzrayim to avoid the Rav. So you see that whenever there's a famine, one should leave the location. Ve'omer, imamarnu navo'ir. So this is talking about, this is the story with the Arba Mitzorayim, the four lepers that are found outside the city. It's the Haftorah for, I think, Parsha Mitzorah. The four lepers that are found outside the city, Gehazin is, the Medrash says it's Gehazi and his children, that are sitting outside, and they are starving outside the city. And they have two choices. They either go back to the city, right? But the city is famine because there's a siege laid by. So that's one choice. The other choice is to walk out to Machane Aram, to go out to the Machane Aram and to give themselves up to Machane Aram and just see whatever happens, happens. So we see over here, it says, Vomer, ima marnu navo'ir varav ba'ir. If we go to the city, the Mitzorim say, and there's famine in the city, umatnu sham, we're going to die there anyway. So my Omer. So why do I need a second pasuk to teach me again? When there's famine, you leave. That only time that I say that you leave the city when there's a rav, that's when there is no suffik nefashot. Meaning that there's not a life-threatening issue to leave the city. So by Abraham, it wasn't life-threatening for to leave Eretz Yisrael to go down to Mitzrayim. That's why he left when there's a rav. Over here, the Mitzorayim, right, they are taking a choice now not to go into the city of Ra'av, but rather to throw themselves to the, right, the Machaneh of Aram that's surrounding them, and they're putting themselves at risk. So it says over here, better to put oneself at risk. Right. I don't know. When I was reading, I also thought that, but I just feel like there's a difference. It's not as imminent as the throwing yourself to the enemy army. It's just not the same type of suffix of a shot that you're talking about. I think that's the distinction the Gemara is drawing over here. All right, so the V'chitei ma'anim ilayich adlech nefashot, aval heichad yikad suffix nefashot, lo, tashma, luchu v'nafal machane Aram, im yichyunu nechia. We're going to throw ourselves to the army of Aram, and basically if they keep us, they'll keep us. And obviously this story ends up on the better note, which is that the machane Aram was long gone, and Hashem already fought the battle, and they were running back to Eivar Yarden already. Tanu Rabbanan, Dever Ba'ir, Ayaleh Chadam Be'emsa Derech. When there's a plague, pestilence in the city, don't walk in the middle of the road. Because then the Malach HaMavet is walking in the middle of the road. The Kevin Di'ayvileh Rishuta, Maske Le'edra. Since he has permission to go out and kill and to be active, he takes advantage and he walks right down the middle of the street enjoying that the freedom and the his job. So therefore, don't bump into him, stay out. Shalom Ba'ir, if the city's peaceful and things are good, Al Yalech B'tzidei Adrachim, don't walk on the sides of the road, walk in the middle of the road. Why? Because the Kevin to let Le Rishuta, since he doesn't have permission to go and attack or kill anybody, Mechabe Chavyuei Maske, he hides himself and goes quietly along the sides of the road. So if you want to avoid the Malcham of it, right, you got to be in the opposite place from where he is. Tanu Rabbanan, Dever Ba'ir, Al Yikanes Adam Yachid Beit Knesset. When there's Dever in the air, a person should not go as a single individual into the shul. Shemalach Mavet Mafkid Sham Kelav. That's where he leaves his tools in the shul. That's only if there's the only case that he leaves his tools there is if they're not children that are learning there. There's no minyan there. But if there's a minyan there that davens in that shul, or if there are children who learn there, then you don't have to worry about it because the Malchum Avos doesn't hang out in that location. I think the idea, again, partly is that the shul, or this is the reason for the Malchum Avos to come. Here you have a defunct, in a sense, a defunct shul. There's nobody learning in the shul, then children aren't learning there, and there's no minyan in that shul. So it's a defunct shul. The Malchum Avos says, this is my perfect location to set up shop because it's a negative indication about the qualitative religious life of the city. And therefore, the Malchum Avos sets up shop, and you shouldn't go in as an individual into that Beit Knesset. Tarabanan, Klavim Buchim, Malamacha Balair. When the dogs are crying, the Malchum Avos is on his way to the city. Klavim Misachakim, if the dogs are playful, Eliyahu Navi Balair. Then you know that Eliyahu Navi is coming. That's only if there's no female around. Otherwise, if there's a female around, then there's another variable causing them to play around, and that's not an indication of Eliyahu Navi that is coming. All right. Yotiv, Rav Ami, Rav Asi, Kamed, Rav Yitzchok, Nafkos. They were both sitting in front of Rav Yitzchok, Nafkos. Amar, Malay, Lemer, Mar, Shmaitato. One of them says, tell us over a halacha. Umar, Malay, Lemer, Mar, Agadato. The other one says, no, I want to hear some Agadah, not halacha. Potok, Lemer, Mar, Agadato. Anytime he began to say Agadato, Velo, Shavik, Mar, the other individual would say, no, I want to hear Shmaitato, I want to hear halacha. Potok, Lemer, Mar, Shmaitato. Anytime he tried to say halacha, right, Velo, Shavik, Mar. The other one wouldn't allow him and says, no, I want to hear Agadato. I'll give you a mashal to what it's this. Right? An individual has two wives. He has a young wife and an older wife. So he has some gray hairs and some black hairs. He's got a pepper and salt there. So the young wife goes and pulls out all the white hairs because she wants them to look younger. The older wife picks out all the dark hairs because she wants them to look older. In the end, he ends up bald to get nothing. Right? So that's the point here. Mikan, umikan. He's bald in all places. Amalan, ihochi. He says, you know what? I have a solution to the problem. I'll tell you over something that is both a gado and halacha from the same pasuk. And that's our pasuk over here. Ki teitzeish umatsa kotzin. Teitze ma'atzma. It suggests over here that it went by itself. Shalem yishalem amavir et ha-be'era. Right, the one who is responsible for the spreading of the fire, right, is then the one who pays, even though he did not actively do it. He wasn't the one that caused the fire to move. Amar Kodesh Baruch Hu, Alay L'Shalem Et HaBeirashi Bar'arti. Right, that I am responsible to pay for the fire that I lit. Ani Hitziti Eish B'Tzion, because I burnt down Tzion. I burnt down Yerushalayim to the Mikdash. And so therefore, I'm responsible to replace it. So even though Kiteitze Eish Me'atzma. What does it mean, Kiteitze Eish Me'atzma? Over here, it wasn't Hashem who caused the fire here. We were the cause of the fire. We were sinned. We did that which was wrong. Our chataim were caused it. Nevertheless, even though it went by itself, the fire came because of our sinning. Nevertheless, Hamavir Tebeira, the one who lit the fire, is responsible. So even though we are responsible for bringing the destruction, Hashem was the one who lit the fire, and therefore Hamavir Tebeira Yishalem, the one who lit the fire, now must pay. So what is that? Shnemar v'yatzid eish b'tziyom v'tochal yisodotah. That they ignited a fire in Zion and it ate its foundations. V'ani atid livnota beish, and I will return it in fire. Shnemar v'ani eyeh lachoma eish saviv v'chavod eyeh b'tocha. So that I will be a wall of fire around it and for a kavod. So this is the idea that we say this on Tisha B'Av and the Nachem, right? That it was a Mikdash was destroyed in Eish, and Watid Hashem livnota beish. That Hashem will return it in Eish. That is Rashi Shita throughout Shas. Rashi believes that the third base of Mikdash will come down Mina Shamayim beish. Based on this Gemara here and other Gemaras that indicate that the third base of Mikdash will come down from Shamayim, will not be built by mankind. There are other Rishonim obviously disagree, but this is Rashi believes this throughout Shas and always mentions whenever he talks about the third base of Mikdash, talks about coming Mina Shamayim in beish. The Marsha has a nice pshat over here. He says, "Kiteitze Eish Me'atzma," is that Hashem, general's midot of Hashem is to do tov. Hashem actively always does tov. So now the only problem is that when we are choteh, when we do sins, we're go'eim Hashem to withhold His tov from us. We cause Hashem to not be generous with His tov. So that's the idea here, meaning that Hashem passively, the bad happened passively. Well, how did it happen passively? Because of our sinning, Hashem was not able to bestow His tov actively. And that's what Kiteitze Eish U'Matzah Kotzim. Right? But now, but then, what does it mean? Shalem, shalem, amavir, to beira. Right, that Hashem says, but when it comes to giving the good, I will do it actively. Meaning that that's my nature to do it actively. So when it comes to the time to rebuild it or to bring it back, I will do it to my tov like I normally do it to be active. So that's the idea in the agarata. Ah, what's the alocha that comes out of this? That's the agarata aspect of it. Right? Shmaitata, potoka katuv, which is something we saw earlier in the Masechta. The pasuk begins, benizke memono, because it says, kiteitze eishu matzak kotzim. It says shalem shalem amavir et beira. It makes the person himself responsible for the damage. That comes to teach us one of the proofs that we had earlier in the Masechta about the machlokes whether isho mishum mimono or isho mishum chitzav. It's one of the proofs that isho is mishum chitzav because the Torah switches from talking about mamon to talking about guf. And since it switches from mamon to guf, that's an indication of chitzav. Chitzav is basically the implication is as if you did it yourself, right? Your arrows, your koach is what causes the arrow to move. So over here, Eish, you're considered culpable for the fires if you spread it by hand, by yourself. All right, now the last agarata on the page. Vayitaver David, vayomer mishkeni mayim, mibor beit lechem. So this is towards the end of Shmuel Bet, talking about all the giborim of David. Says David says, you know, I want some water from this well in, or the bor, the cistern in Beit Lechem. Asher b'shar, that's near the gate. Well, the only problem was that this boar was in the middle of the army or the encampment of the Plishtim. So three Giborim went through, busted through, and they got the water for him. They drew the water for him, and they bring it back to David HaMelech. The pasuk continues, we'll see in a minute, the pasuk continues that David refused to drink from the water, and then he pours it out to Hashem and he refuses to drink from it. So the Gemara wants to know what's going on here. What's going on with David here? It's a very strange case. So Gemara says, "My kami bayle." The Gemara is sure that David was really asking a question. And that means that when he asked me bor beilechem, he wanted to ask the Sanhedrin. And bor and the mayim is representative of Torah. That David had a Torah question that he needed to ask, and he wanted the clarification about something about the battle. What's this? Amar Rava. This is the question. Amar of Nachman. Tamun beish ki mayile. He had a question about Tamun beish. He wanted to know who's the lach like. Ikra Yehuda, Ikra Rabbanon. Right? Is the lach like Rabbi Yehuda Rabbanon? Upashle, my de Pashle. And they answered him, whatever the lach is, whether it's like Rabbi Yehuda or the Rabbanon. The Rei Rashi explains the case is that some of David's troops went ahead and burnt down a Gadish of Israel, and he wanted to know if he was Chayav to compensate the owners of the Gadish for that which is inside, or only for the Gadish itself. Ravuna Amar, no, that it was a much more complex question here. Gadishim de Sorim de Israel Havu. They were silos or piles of seorim of the Jews, meaning that there was barley that was piled up of the Jews. Dave mitamrei plishtim behu. The plishtim were hiding out in these piles. His question was, maula tzil atzmo b'manu chavero. Can I save myself with my friend's property? Am I entitled to save myself with my friend's property? Shalklei asur latzil atzmo b'manu chavero. You're not allowed to save yourself with your friend's property. So now, what does that mean? You're not allowed to save yourself with your friend's property. I mean, if you have a pikuach nefesh, of course you can save yourself with your friend's property. So Tosos reformulates the question, but basically to make it sense here, the question is not whether can I burn them down, can I protect myself. The question is, are you chayav? If I have permission to save myself with my friend's property, then I won't have to compensate him for using it. Then if I do not have permission to use his property, then in pikuach nefesh it's suspended, and I'm allowed to burn it for pikuach nefesh, but that means I still will be responsible to compensate him for using his property. And that was the question here. And the answer to him was, yes, you must recompensate the owners of the property if you burn their stuff down. Except, avalata melechata, you're a king. King has special permission, meaning that eminent domain. King can take what he wants. He can do what he wants. So he can override what would actually be the civil law. Here, the civil law would be that you would have to repay the owners of the property. But because you're a king, you do not have to repay them for it. Now, we have a last opinion of what the question was. This was the question. There were piles of barley of the Jews. Ugedishim dadashim de plishtim, and the plishtim had lentil piles, right? Bekamai bayelu. This was the question. Mauli told gedishim shel sorim de Israel. Can I take the gedishim, the piles of barley of the Jews, litain lifnei bemto, to feed our animals here in the machane? Amanat l'shalem gedishim shel adashim de plishtim to return. I'm going to pay them back. I'm just going to intend. I'm going to do the damage. Technically, I'm doing damage. I'm taking someone else's property without permission, but I'll repay them with the stuff that we win in the battle. I'm just going to give it back to them. The gedishim of the plishtim. So over there, it's talking about the pasuk in Yechezkel, it's talking about doing tshuva. that a person comes back to do tshuva. So when he comes back, he says chavol, that which is chavalah, he has to repay. Yeshiv, rasha, the rasha will return. That's what he did bechavalah, right? Through damage that he did to others. Gzeila, that which he stole, yishalem, he will pay. But what do you see this? Afal pi shegzeila mishalem, even though he's repaying that which he stole, even though he's giving back that which he took, rashahu, he's still classified as a rasha. It calls him chavil yeshiv rasha. Right, that which he took, he's returning, but yet he's called the Rasha when he returns it. So it's still Rasha. Aval, even though normally someone would be classified as a Rasha, Valata, Melechata, you're a king, or Melech Foreitz Lasel Derech, Vein Mochim Yado. You have this principle of eminent domain, and therefore you can override the general laws that apply to normal people over here. Now, what's very important over here is that the Gemara calls this, or seems to indicate, a connection between Chavalah, which is Nezek, right, Nezakin, and Gzeila, which might be one of the sources, as I've heard this from Rav Rosenzweig, this might be one of the sources for what's the Isur by Nezek. One of the possibilities what the Isur Nezek is Lo Tigzol, that you may not steal from someone else. And because Lo Tigzol is the source for this Nezek, you see it over here. See that the Gemara brings down Chavol Yashiv Rasha, Gzeila Yishalem, right? That even though the, right, he did Chavalah, he's called a Rasha, even though he's Gzeila, he's repaying. So you see the Gemara is drawing some sort of connection between Chavalah and Gzeila, which indicates maybe there's an Isur, and that's what the Gemara seems to conclude here, that even though you repay it, so if you thought Nizakim had no Isur, then simply repaying the damage you did should be sufficient. There should be nothing left. But you see the Gemara thinks there's a residual Isur here. What's the residual Isur here? Seems to be the residual Isur is Lo Tigzol, do not steal. And it's more apparent, the Bach quotes a... The Bach brings a Mordechai, who brings from a Rabbeinu Yakir and another Girsa in our Gemara. And the Girsa in our Gemara is a case that Ma'ulad Liki Disho Shel Chavero Kedei L'Shalem. The case in our Gemara is not where he was going to give it to his animals, but rather where he burnt the Gedishim down. And they want to know, what's the din? If he burns the Gedishim down and he repays it, is that enough? Or is that still an Isur? And what do we say? It's an Isur. So even though he's a Mazik, the Gemara still calls it an Isur of Lo Tigzol. This might be one of the sources for what the Isra of doing Nezek to another individual is. Now Gemara says, Bishloma, right, it makes sense according to Manda Amar Dach Lufe, that they wanted to switch what was there. Hainu Dichtiv Chadkra, one pasuk in Shmuel says, Vati Sham Chalkat Stade Malei Adashim, there was a field full of lentils. Dichtiv Chadkra, another pasuk says, In Divrei Yamim, Vati Chalkat Stade Malei Asiorim, there's a field full of barley. Right, so that explains why you have two fields here, because that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to do an exchange. Over here he's talking about he wanted to burn the stuff down to get the enemy out of the fields. Why do I need my ibayiluhu lahani trei cry? Why do I need two psukim for? That were both. They were plishtim were hiding out both in fields of adashim of lentils and fields of barley. So bishlam alandar mikle hanu dichtiv. The court, the one who says he burnt it down, that's what it says. Veitetzei betoch chalka vayatzila. He stood in the middle of the field and he saved it. Because after he got the psak halacha that he's not allowed to save himself with other people's money, David stopped them from burning down the fields. So he saved their property. The Jews' property wasn't burnt because of the psak halacha. What's he saving here? In the end, they were going to get paid whatever it was. They weren't going to lose anything over here. No, that's the answer. The answer is that he saved them having to lose out whatever their barley getting exchanged for lentils. He saved them having to go through that exchange. That's what he saved them from. Bishlamahane tarte. Those two opinions, the opinion that it was a swap or the opinion that it was burning the field down. That's why we need both psukim over here. Alamandamar Tamun Beish, the one who says that the question that he asked the Beisdin was Tamun Beish. What do I need two psukim? It really should be three cry. What do I need a second pasuk for? The one who says that the question was Tamun says it was a question of Tamun plus one of the others. I need one of the others to join in here. There are really two questions that were available here. According to one of the later two expressions, David refused to drink the waters. Even though I have permission to do this because I'm a king, there's an Isur here. They say you're not allowed to save yourself with someone else's mamon, or there's still an Isur. Even when you take something and repay it, there's still an Isur Nezek. So if that's the case, I don't want to perform an Isur, and therefore I didn't take it. I didn't want to drink it. What do you mean you didn't want to drink it? It's a psak halacha. The psak halacha is either, yes, tamun you're chayef for, no, tamun you're patur for. My lo ava devi lishtotam. Right? What does it mean that David didn't want to drink them? The lo amrinu mishmayhu. That is that he didn't say it over the names of those giborim that went to get him the answer. Why? Amar kach mikublani bebeit dino shel Shmuel. This is a mesorah I have from the Beit Din of Shmuel Ramati. Kol moser atzmo lamut al divrei Torah. Anybody who gives up or endangers their life to bring divrei Torah, ein omrim devar halacha mishmo. We don't say it over in his name. We don't say over in his name this that which he is, that which they're bringing. Therefore, over here, that's what it means, that lo avad lishtotam. He didn't want to drink, means he didn't want to say it over in their name anymore. He sanctified them, he poured them out to Hashem. According to the other two, he did it l'shem shemayim, because technically David had permission to do them because he was the king. But he refrained from doing it because for lay people it would have been an isur. That's what it means, that he spilled out the waters, meaning that he took action that was l'shem shemayim, because he went lifnei mishurat hadin. Right? The one who says it's tamur eish, what do you mean that he sanctified them to Hashem? This again, it's a psak halacha. So Ella, what does it mean, v'yasech l'tam Hashem? D'amrinan mishma d'gemara. So that before we said lo aval ishtotam means that he won't say him over the names of those giborim that endanger their lives to bring the Torah. But v'yasech l'tam Hashem means that we'll say it over in the name of the Gemara, the Stam. It'll be a Stam memra in the name of the Gemara that this is the halacha. Okay, we'll stop over here.